This is The State of Things. I'm Rusty Jacobs. As some of you may have heard on today's final airing of The Connection, that show broadcast live from Baghdad 1 month after the beginning of the war in Iraq, the dust barely settled from the invasion.
I'm Dick Gordon, live from Baghdad. This is The Connection. Let me take you on a walk through the lobby of Iraq's National Library. The building itself still pulses with the heat of a fire which has destroyed tens of thousands of books. Underfoot, the exploded light fixtures and plate glass. Display cases are hanging open, blackened. The marble floor itself is buckled and broken. In one back room, an unemployed newspaper cartoonist leafs through smoke-stained books, looking for all that might be left of his life's work. On the steps outside, Okazai Shakir, one of the library's translators, says through a clenched jaw that a nation without its libraries is destined to live in ignorance.
I am feeling a pain inside, in heart, because the books is not for the regime, for the people, all people, Iraqi people. Everybody can read, learn, everything. For this case, for this reason, I am sad.
And your children, when yes. They are students or when they need to come to a library, they won't have...
I have to leave Iraq. Really? I have to leave Iraq.
Why?
To get a good level for them, cultural.
A better cultural level,
yes.
Better education.
For them, yes.
Where will you go?
Jordan, Libya, and anywhere.
Not to America?
Not to America. Not to America, really. Really. Not to America.
The Connection was and still is the only national talk show to visit Iraq since the war began. It wasn't a surprise that the show would take that risk. Its host, Dick Gordon, built a distinguished career as a foreign journalist in the former Soviet Union, Israel, and around the world. 2 weeks ago today, The Connection was abruptly canceled by public radio station WBUR in Boston. It was carried by 66 stations nationwide, including North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC, where The State of Things is produced. Dick Gordon and many of the show's staff members were fired and left wondering why the show was canceled and what they would do now. Dick Gordon joins us today, and if his telephone line sounds a little distant, that's because he's talking to us from a remote, undisclosed location in his native Canada. Dick, welcome.
Hello, Rusty. It doesn't have to be that undisclosed. I'm just at the north end of the Great Lakes, hard to find on a map.
Okay, and we're going to get more. I'd like to know a little bit more about your surroundings there in a second, but I'd also like to welcome calls this hour from listeners. The number is 1-877-962-9862. We want to talk today about the power of radio to create a sense of place, the changing role of war correspondents, the strengths and limitations of talk show journalism, and as again, we welcome your calls, 1-877-962-9862. So, Dick, can you give us a sense of place right now? Where are you, and what does it look like?
Well, I'm at the mouth of a river called the Magnetowan River. I'm at the top of a rock near a local motel in order to get the sort of good reach to the nearby cell phone tower, so this line holds up. We have a summer place, Rusty, not far from here, about 10 miles from the end of the road by boat. And during all those years that my family lived overseas, it was the only home that we had. And there was a time, I think, about 10 years ago, when my daughters actually thought that this little plywood house that we lived in was our home. Why didn't we live there in the wintertime? But it's a place where I come every summer. Longtime friends and family are nearby, and it's a nice place to spend time.
And I guess it's serving as a refuge now.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's a place where you can keep busy chopping wood. We're trying to get the basics together for a boat shed and stuff like that, and any kind of physical work like that, as you well know, is a welcome distraction, I should say.
Well, let's get to the heart of what is on a lot of listeners' minds. 2 weeks ago, The Connection was canceled. Tell us how you were told and what the reasons were that were given to you by WBUR officials.
It came about as much as a surprise to me as I guess it did to most listeners of The Connection, Rusty. I was actually packed and ready to go on vacation, writing the introductions and the billboards for the final two editions of The Connection in mid-July, and I got an email from our acting general manager, a fellow by the name of Peter Fiedler, saying, I would like you to come to a meeting at my office at 12:30, blah, 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 blah. And I looked at my plane ticket, and I thought, ooh, this is going to be difficult because I was supposed to fly out of Logan at 2 o'clock. And so I sent him back an email saying, Peter, can we talk about this electronically, or can we put the meeting off for another time, or what is it exactly that you want to talk about? And I got another email back saying I'll get back to you ASAP, but I didn't hear back from Peter Fiedler prior to the show's going to air at 10 o'clock that morning. And so I signed off. My last live program was with the wonderful poet Richard Wilbur, and it was a fun hour. I really enjoyed it. And we signed off the program, and I stepped out into the hallway and was escorted down to Mr. Fiedler's office, where I met with him and program director Sam Fleming, and someone from Human Resources, and they. You sit down facing three people like that, Rusty, and you know it isn't that you forgot to renew your parking pass. So at that point, it was clear something was up. But it never occurred to me that they would take The Connection off the air, and it had never occurred to me prior to that moment that there was anything going on involving the program that might lead them to consider that the program should be taken off the air. Our ratings were good. I mean, we had had no negative feedback from anyone at the station saying that, you need to change this or you need to change that. So, it was quite a surprise.
Well, I want to note here, too, that we did contact WBUR and invited them to come on the show to talk about the cancellation, and they declined the invitation. Having said that, I mean, you've said, at least in one article I read, that you have about 4,000 theories for why the dismissal happened, and I'm wondering if you'd care to share 2,000 or 3,000 of them. I'll take two. How about just two?
Yeah, exactly. The explanations that they are giving are numerous as well. They talk about, wanting to save money, but they are also running three network shows there, and they're all, costing WBUR over $1 million. So, it's not like the Connection was the only duck in the pond. And they've talked about, going back to more local news, but they were questioned about that and said, no, we'll continue doing all our world news and international stuff. That was the expertise that they brought in hiring me 4 years ago. Realignment, which is something that is never explained, and talk about ratings, which, I've spent a lot of time looking at the numbers and actually can't see the case that they're making, that they're, there were fewer listeners, or the people weren't staying with the program. So the reasons that they've given to me are baffling. None of them really answer the question. We have received not only from the North Carolina region, but from right across the country. At last count that I had, over 1,000 emails of protest and hundreds of phone calls. I've had letters forwarded up to me here, or I should say brought up by a friend who came up from Boston a while ago. And, all that feedback is asking the question why. And that's, as you pointed out in your preface to the question, something that WBUR has to answer. It's probably worth explaining to your listeners that, The Connection doesn't come to air quite the same way as All Things Considered or Morning Edition, which are NPR programs produced in Washington. It's what they call an acquired program. If the State of Things, for example, were picked up by a dozen other stations, then it would also be an acquired program. That means distributed by through NPR in Washington and then acquired by a bunch of other programs. So it's kind of it's difficult to be precise about who makes the decisions here. Is NPR involved? Is it just WBUR? And even that's been a little bit vague in terms of, NPR people being quoted anecdotally to me as saying, no, they didn't have anything to do with the decision to shut down the program, and then people at WBUR claiming that, in fact, they did. So it's a mystery, Rusty. I can't go much beyond that.
We have just about a minute before our first break, and I did want to ask you this. You wrote in an op-ed paid article today in the Boston Globe about this, and it seems like you were speaking to listeners. And while you expressed a visceral reaction and anger on behalf of yourself and your friends who were fired, you also talked about a kind of a philosophical or intellectual concern about the consequences of losing a show like this. Can you talk a bit about that?
You know, I'll be brief about it, and perhaps we can come back and talk more about it after the break, Rusty, because to me it's key. You know, when you're finding your place in the radio universe now, you need to be a little bit smart about what it is your program is going to offer. Are you going to be just another version of just another call-in show, or are you going to find and develop an identity for a program that is going to last over a considerable period of time that people then return to? And I mean, the one thing that I did with The Connection and my amazing staff at The Connection did was try to figure out a mix of both international news, arts, culture, science, all that stuff, but also a way of dealing not only with guests, but with listeners that, you know, reaches out a little bit more, is a little bit more compassionate, is a way of involving people in what they hear on the radio. And I'd be happy to talk more about that little later on.
And we will definitely talk with you about that. And we've got callers on the line waiting to speak with Dick Gordon as well. This is The State of Things. Talking today with Dick Gordon, former host of The Connection, taking your calls at 1-877-962-9862. Support for The State of Things comes from listeners who support North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. Stay with us. This is The State of Things. I'm Rusty Jacobs. For 28 years, Dick Gordon has been a radio journalist at the CBC, that's the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, in Canada, and host of The Connection, a public radio program broadcast on 66 public radio stations nationwide. And just before the break, Dick was talking about what he sees as maybe a threat on the horizon, something maybe ominous about the cancellation of a program like The Connection. And Dick, I want you to go ahead and pick up where you left off if you want, or I have a couple of questions on that note. Did you want to just pick up where you were?
Well, just to conclude, I mean, you put it well in that preface, Rusty, where, you know, you're trying to figure out what people want in a talk radio and a call-in program today at a time when they can hear. You know, you can find anywhere on the internet or anywhere on most radio dials the kind of program that is going to, you know, confirm your worldview, whether or not you see things through a red or a blue filter, or you come at this with a political baggage or left or right leaning, all that is there to say, yes, you're right. And I think one of the neatest things about The Connection was that we actively tried to avoid taking a position to, you know, put people on together who might disagree, but then to create a forum where they didn't yell at each other. I mean, that's anywhere. You can get that crossfire kind of entertainment journalism at pretty well any level on radio or on television, even in the editorial pages of some newspapers. But if you're trying to use radio in its sort of wonderful, the way it exploits the human voice, the way it draws people in as they're listening, almost as if they're eavesdropping, then you can get different points of view on in a way that doesn't just say, I'm right, you're wrong, but it's like, hold on, let me tell you what I think, and then you can, and so you can get that kind of debate and explanation, and when you mix that in with the sort of high level of callers that we've had on The Connection for the past years, you've got a really interesting mix to be a part of. And as I said, if you treat the callers as people, rather than, you know, hi, I'm someone from somewhere and I've got an opinion, and then you push the button and you know, go back to hearing yourself talk and hearing the guests talk. That's not the kind of inclusive program we were running. I remember years ago a person I much admired at the CBC. I was doing some fill-in host work for him at the time, and Peter Zosky was his name. And I said to Peter, you know, why does the program work so well when you're sitting in the chair? Why, you know, what's your little secret? And he said, the secret is simple. It's never about the host. It's not about you. People will learn to like you or learn to appreciate you or even learn to dislike you over time. But if the program is about the guest, giving them the chance to speak, getting the callers, you know, to engage, then the people will like the program. And that's the kind of thing we went for in the connection, and I think listeners really liked it as well. I think that was what made us distinct.
I want to go to the calls because we have so many lined up here. Before I do, though, I want to ask this in a delicate way as possible. But do you see something in what happened here with the connection? You know, I think you touched on this in your op-ed piece about the current debate over public radio, public journalism, public broadcasting. Is there anything in here in your op-ed piece that you see? In the choice, in other words, of the connection being canceled, is this just a matter of cost? Is this just too costly a production for WBUR in your estimation, or is there something else going on here, something deeper?
No, I don't think, when you add up the dollars necessarily, you'd say, oh, the connection was a much more expensive program. Any network news call-in program is expensive to produce, and the three that WBUR produces all cost over $1 million a year. That's salaries of the whole staff and all the studios that have to be booked and all the overseas connections that last for, you know, an hour or better, and all the research that has to be done prior to the programs. I don't see a political agenda in this. I think it was a decision that was made by the people who are currently in charge at WBUR. I happen to disagree with, you know, the reasons that they've put out for the decision, but when it comes to, you know, looking at the grander scheme and the, you know, all the worry about the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and you know, is the left going to be squeezed and shut down? I mean, our program, and I think you could find this as a fairly universal from guests that we've had on the program and people who made a habit of listening to it, didn't skew hard left and didn't skew hard right, but tried to run a call-in show in much the same way that I was trained to write stories as a journalist, and that is, you know, with balance and with accuracy and with fairness. And sure, stuff slips through the crack. You'll get people on who spew something, and you can stop and have an argument about that, or you can continue on. Rusty, that's one of the exciting things about live radio is the unexpected and you know, the instinct to follow that. So. Right. I don't actually think that there's anything darker, bigger, and beyond WBUR. I think, you know, they have some of their reasons, and maybe they are not being public with some of those reasons.
Well, let's take a call. Marina, a seventh grader from Chapel Hill. Marina?
Yes. My name is Marina, and I'm a rising seventh grader at Smith Middle School. And I was really saddened to hear that the connection would be discontinued on NPR. Me and my mom listened to it on the web, and I really like the shows, The Book That Changed My Life, and other shows dealing with cultures and politics. And I migrated here from Brazil, South America. And the connection kind of showed me some of the ways that Americans live life, too, and their cultures and stuff like that. And it has become part of my life, and it's brain to my food. Hmm. It's food for my brain, my bad.
Well-fed brain there, Marina. So I just wondered, do any of your fellow seventh graders share your interest and your devotion to the connection?
Well, we don't usually talk about stuff like this, because our school, we don't usually talk about politics in school, but I know that a lot of my fellow students listen to the radio, NPR.
Well, thanks so much for calling, Marina. Dick Gordon, a Canadian hosting an American show, reaching a Brazilian. I suppose that's rewarding.
It was a big table with lots of chairs at it, and I have to tell you, Marina, it warms my heart to hear your voice and to know that there were programs that we did on the connection that you found interesting, because that in part is, I think, what radio does at its best, is that it discovers things. As I discover it, you discover it, and it's not a program where, you know, people try to outsmart one another, because you can hear that on different radio programs. I'm delighted that you had a chance to spend some time with us on The Connection. I'm sorry I won't have a chance to continue that with you, but I do want to thank you for your call.
And Dick, one thing I've admired about your work is the way you do deal with the callers and the way you make them a very central part of the program. And you seem to always push people to explore their questions and to kind of challenge them to say even a little bit more than perhaps they were ever prepared to. How central was that to your approach?
You know, I just think that it was in so many ways one of the key identifiers of the program. You know that, I mean, there are statistics, and people could give you more detail about this, Rusty, that, you know, if you've got 100 callers, you've got X number of 1,000 people listening who don't want to call, and you've got some callers, not that many actually, who want to call up and hear themselves speak, but you've got all these other callers who, you know, if they're feeling like the program is something that they can participate in, really want to do that. They want to, contribute their story or their perspective. We were doing a program, Rusty, I guess about a year ago on healthcare, and I remember a young woman calling up from North Carolina, and the story that she told on the program was that she was between jobs, and she'd found a lump in her breast, but she wasn't going to go to the doctor until she had a job that provided her with some health care benefits, because she wasn't going to be able to do anything about it, and she'd rather not know. And, I mean, it knocked the wind out of me. It knocked the wind out of everybody in the control room. There was this sort of deep silence that came after the story that she told, and only in reflecting on that later was I thinking, God, you know, I mean, this is how personal people take the radio, the opportunity to share the kind of thing that, you know, they might not want to tell other people. So if you can create that public space on public radio like The Connection did, and people participate in that way, then I think you really are contributing something to the national discourse.
Let's take a call from Duffy in Chapel Hill. Hey, Duffy.
Hello there.
What's on your mind?
I don't want to make this an hour of obituaries. You keep saying The Connection, the past tense. I still hold out hope that some public radio station may step forward and pick it up. But whenever I've been discussing with my friends why I love The Connection so much, I always cite as an example, and Dick, I want you to confirm this. Did you do an hour-long program on the history of the fable of Rumpelstiltskin? But I'm not sure it was Rumpelstiltskin, but you took it from, you did something that took it all the way from like the 1500s in Germany through a rap presentation in Brooklyn or something. Do you remember that hour?
Duffy, I'm sorry, I'm having a really hard time. I'm getting about every second word. Rusty, can you just step in here and give me a quick Precy, what Duffy was saying? He was asking about an hour and asking if I remembered it, but I couldn't hear the identifier.
That's right. Duffy, just once again, the quick description of the show.
Oh, it was an hour-long discussion on the history of one fable. And I believe it was Rumpelstiltskin.
So, yeah, Dick, it was a one-hour discussion of the fable of Rumpelstiltskin, he believes. Do you recall that?
I don't. I'm afraid. Well, we've done right. Some in-depth work. We did one on the Grimm brothers. We've done others looking back at fairy tales. I don't recall on Rumpelstiltskin, though.
No, but the point I was making, whether it's Rumpelstiltskin or not, it's one thing to be able to talk about a current event that you know is going to generate tremendous enthusiasm and a lot of phone calls, but to be able to talk for an hour about the Grimm fairy tales or something like that, and at the end of which time I would say to myself, that was something I could have lived the rest of my life without knowing that in depth, but I'm a better person for having spent the hour listening to it.
Well, Duffy, let me take that to Dick. So basically, the point there, Dick, is that, you know, you can have plenty of call-in shows, but here's a show that took the time to explore a subject, the extent to which Duffy didn't get any elsewhere. And what he was saying was he could have lived without the hour spent on Grimm's Fairy Tales, but he's a better person for having tuned in for that hour. And I think he's expressing, you know, the kind of sadness that some listeners are feeling. And there's another question he raised, which is he hates to hear this like it's an obituary. He holds out hope that the connection or something like it with you as a host would find a home. You can address that question too.
Yeah, well, we've had a number of interested inquiries from some public radio stations, most of them people who carried the connection, saying, what are you going to do and where are you going to go and what's going to happen to the connection? And you know, I mean, my honest answer to that is I don't know right now, and I'm not going to know for a little while. Just to remind you, I got this news on the day that I was heading out on vacation, and usually about the time I go out on vacation, it's because I'm so exhausted from a year of hosting the program that I need to go somewhere and recharge. I haven't had much chance to do that over the past 2 or 3 weeks, and so I just want to be smart and think about where I go next and what I do next. You know, people like Duffy have been unbelievably warm in saying, you know, we'd like to have you still on our radio, and you know, that may well happen. I'm nothing's concrete, and I'm not asking for anything concrete because I need to sort out some other affairs right now. But you know, I just on the first point of Duffy's call, I probably had the hardest working group of producers on the connection of any group I've ever worked with. If we did a book, the producer read the book and I read the book. You won't find that on a lot of public radio programs. It meant that we didn't do as many books as we would have liked, but you know, we did one or two a week, and that's a lot of reading and that's a lot of hours. And I mean, the delight for me in preparing an hour-long show on the Grimm's brothers and their fairy tales was that it was like being, you know, in sort of in permanent graduate school. I'm always getting a file from a producer or a book to read and said, learn this, read about this. You know, I was having as much fun doing the research in advance of the program as then I would hope that the listeners would have in listening to the program. And that's something that was, I think, special about the program. There are so many authors on the move through radio stations that most of those interviews are done by people who, you know, get the questions written out for them by someone else who read the book, and quite frankly, if you're smart, you can tell the difference.
One book you could probably write about is something about foreign correspondence and journalism overseas, and I'd like to change gears a little here and play a clip from some work you did when you were a foreign journalist in the Soviet Union. So, Dick Gordon, were you able to hear a little bit of that piece? It was a report you did from the airport in Azerbaijan, I guess.
That takes me back. Yeah, I used to have wonderful fun telling the stories of what it was like to try and get around the former Soviet Union when it was making its transition to the countries that it is today. It was fascinating to see that part of the world at that moment of change. It was a time, Rusty, that took me to, you know, Afghanistan at least half a dozen times for the arrival of the Taliban and for fighting between the Mujahideen. I was in and out of Pakistan all the time, and it was, I mean, that was great when it comes to hosting a talk show, because you know the highway pass that someone is describing where their car was pulled off the road and stuff like that. It's nice to be able to have those reference points. But the other thing about working as a correspondent is that your principal job is as a storyteller, and if you can bring some of that to work as the host of a talk show where it's not just, you know, pundits exchanging their own version of the headlines of the day in a kind of rat-a-tat fashion, but you're figuring out, okay, well, what's the story here? Why are we telling this story? What's the story behind, you know, Condoleezza Rice's latest move in North Korea? What's the story that we want to tell or that we want to tell about Bolton's recess appointment and that sort of thing? I mean, you can apply those same rules of storytelling to the latest in current the best in literature or science that you happen to be working with.
We just have a little bit before our next break, Dick, but I was just curious, how typical was it for you and your overseas correspondents to just whip out the microphone there in a situation that you were experiencing not as a journalist necessarily, but just as a person in this setting and turn it into a story?
I mean, if something catches your interest as a person, chances are, if you can retell that story in an interesting way on the radio, it's going to catch the interest of the people who are listening. So, I mean, try to think, Rusty, if you would have replayed a story that I filed from Baku, Azerbaijan, about the latest in the conflict with the Armenians over Nagorno-Karabakh and the line of control shifting and a couple of clips of the politicians in translation. I mean, that story's got a shelf life. It's important. You know, don't get me wrong. It was my bread and butter. But those stories have a shelf life that you can measure in hours. And the image and the idea and the picture of these bearded Azeri travelers all flaked out on the marble of the Baku airport, sleeping away the delay to the next flight. I mean, it's a picture that's strong in my mind. And that's, I think, what we should be doing as radio journalists.
We're talking today on The State of Things with Dick Gordon, public radio journalist, host, and storyteller. And we're going to hear more of his stories ahead. Your calls to 1-877-962-9862 on The State of Things. This is The State of Things. I'm Rusty Jacobs. We're talking today with Dick Gordon, former host of the public radio show The Connection, and we're taking your calls at 1-877-962-9862. And Dick, before we ask you a bit about what might be next, I'd like to take a couple of calls here. So first, Brian from Chapel Hill. Brian, hello.
Hi. Well, thank you for having me on your show.
Yeah, tell us what's on your mind.
Well, I'm a professor at the University of North Carolina. I'm a teaching faculty in the chemistry department. And just this year, I wrote a grant to get funding for an honors course using new media. And about fully three-quarters of the new media that I was going to have students use in lieu of reading articles and buying textbooks came from the archived interviews from Dick Gordon's show. So the loss of The Connection to me really came as a surprise, and, you know, it's August whatever today is, and the semester starts up August 30th, and I contacted WBUR to find out what's going to happen to the archives with all of his great experts. The name of my course is Society Ethics and Biotechnology, and what I really wanted to bring in was, since I can't get, you know, the experts, veterinary experts from UC Davis to talk about BSE live in my classroom, I was really going to use Dick Gordon's old interviews in my, as part of my class. So it's with great sadness that I see The Connection leave, and I'm really wondering what's going to happen to all those wonderful interviews. And Mr. Gordon, I think you just had one of the best shows on NPR.
Well,
oh,
Dave,
Brian, that's I could hear that call. Okay, Rusty, thanks, Brian, and I appreciate your kind words as well. I have a confession to make. As a student, I spent very little time with science, and while you'd think that that might then handicap me in handling that subject on the radio, I get to discover it along with other people. And you know, the sort of higher the fruit, the longer the reach, the more exciting it would be. I love doing the science programs. Not necessarily, you know, at the Ira Flatow level, but more in a way where we get to figure out those complicated ethical issues. And on the radio, that was a lot of fun for me. I don't know what happens to the archives of the program. It would be a question well worth putting to the people who are in charge at WBUR. I believe that most of those programs still live on in archives, and they may still be there, but I can't answer your question. I just don't know.
Dick, how did you balance you know, all these years, both being able or having to respond to the news of the day, and then at the same time probably do something that required a more lengthy preparation for a show, say on a scientific topic, something that you didn't come across as a student?
Yeah, it was always fun actually to close out that first hour at 11 o'clock and get that 5-minute gulp of air while the news is on before we began the second hour, in many cases to comment with my staff there at The Connection about what a leap we're making. You know, here we have just spent an hour on the air with journalists, you know, joining us live from Baghdad and Jordan or Saudi Arabia and places like that, with the very latest on the breaking news from a from a place like that, and Zoom, we go, you know, straight off into, you know, the year of Einstein or some book, some poetry, for example. I mean, my goodness, there may be no better marriage of two forms of communication than hearing poetry read well on the radio and allowing poets the further opportunity to talk more about that. I used to really look forward to those programs. They were hard. You're right, Rusty, because you can't just sort of show up and say, so where do you sit when you write in the morning and you know, trot out the usual four or five questions. That's what was kind of the neatest thing about the Connection audience. We had listeners like Brian who relied on us to challenge them and give them something to think about, to go a little bit beyond that. And it takes time. It's not a format that you can spring on people in September and have everybody bought into in November. And so I think perhaps one of the most discouraging things about the decision by WBUR to cancel the program was, you know, that we were in the midst of establishing that that core group of listeners. I mean, on that level alone, our ratings were among the best at NPR. I mean, I had every reason to believe that I was going to be sitting in that host chair for, you know, another 5 or 10 years, as basically as long as the program was performing well and engaging listeners. So, you know, that I guess, right. You know, reflecting on it this summer, it's sort of like, oh my God, you know, so what next? And the what next question hasn't been answered, but the why and the, you know, the fact that was sort of abruptly brought to a conclusion is difficult.
We have just a little time left for two questions that I think were really important to ask. One is, has anything been left undone in your eyes with the Connection?
It's a good question, Rusty, because I think that if you'd asked me that question a month ago or 2 months ago, I'd have said, you know, give me a little time and let me think about that. I really like the fact that, you know, we were putting together interesting series like the book that changed my life, produced by Christina Russo, one of the, you know, best producers I've ever worked with. Tara Murphy, our senior producer, doing, you know, Presidents at Wartime with all her experience in Washington. We have, you know, one of the top engineers in the country who was turning around daily news sound and stuff like that. So the opportunity that we had to work together was making us better day after day. And so struggling to find an answer to your question, what was left undone, I guess I'm only going to be allowed to imagine what that gathering of talent could have done in another year and another two and another 4 years, which was basically what, you know, we all had reason to believe we'd have a chance to do. So that's kind of a broad answer. I can't say I wanted to interview this author or I wanted to cover that story. I listen to the news each morning and I think to myself still, oh, that would be a good first hour. Or, you know, I read somebody says, have you read this book? And I think, yeah, that'd be fun. We should get that author on. So I need to sort of correct that mindset, I guess.
And here's the last one, Dick. Briefly, I'm just, you know, you've reported under gunfire. You've sat in the host chair. Which of those do you like better, or what is there something else that's in store for you?
Boy, you know, I'm not sure that I'm ready to put on a flak jacket and head overseas for a protracted period of time. You spend a long time away from your family when you're working as a foreign correspondent, and I did that for about 15 years. I loved it. If I was asked to do it again, I'd probably be really tempted to do that. But, you know, as you mentioned earlier, I've been at this now close to 30 years, and that range of experience, both in arts and in hard news, lends itself to, you know, using that in the host chair. So I like to do that. I'll probably do that again. Where, when, how, I don't know the answer to any of those questions right now. But it's kind of, you know, I could put on John Burns from Baghdad and ask him questions that I knew that he would be interested in answering, because, you know, I've sat in that dusty room with a sat phone in my hand much as he does every day now. So you kind of get to do both when you're hosting. I guess that's the best answer I can give you, Rusty.
Dick Gordon, journalist and former host of The Connection, thanks a lot for sharing your stories with us today.
You know, and thanks for the opportunity to talk again on the radio. And this is the last day the program was on the air. I appreciate that, and I tip my hat to you folks at WUNC and to the fine group of listeners that we had in North Carolina.
Be well.
Thanks.
That's Dick Gordon, former host of The Connection.